pictures. A little lip peeked around the corner. Yep, that's the one. And up the top. Yep. Just wheeled his old peg for it up. Wham. 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 He chopped that church spire down in three pieces. Bung, one up there, one there, one there. And we never did. The insects, just a nasty dirt, dust, and debris, but so we didn't even bother to stop. We kept on going. Well, then, when I got further along, there was a nice cut in the road, you know, lined both sides nicely. And I, as I say, I had all the brim carriers. So I had all the company carriers. I had more firepower than the battalion had when it came to machine guns. Or almost as much. And so I didn't know where to go. If I kept on going further on, I'd taken a quick look ahead. And the village ahead was under attack. There were Germans and Canadians having a nice little scrap down there, and I had no desire to get mixed up in it. And they were so intermixed that there's nothing I could do about it anyway, you know. I mean, you couldn't just go and fire. You can't go rushing up if you don't know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so I offloaded the carriers and lined up both sides of this cutting. And all of a sudden, from the seaside, somebody put out a yell and said, "Somebody's coming." I was looking up the other way. Italian's got to be way up there. I wonder if they're way up by that hill or, you know, trying to figure out where they were. And here I am looking way out ahead. And the fellow, because, you know, we kept the lookout both sides, very smart. And the fellow said, "Somebody's coming." And so, sure enough, somebody's sneaking along the edge of a hedge. He came out. I said, "Hey, so, it's got to be Canadian Scottish." You know why? The guy had his pants rolled up logger style. his pants all rolled up logger style, which only a West Coaster, only the West Coast regiments. Sure enough, it was the advanced scout of the battalion. 2 minutes later, the battalion had married up with us. We'd been 2 miles ahead of them. Parts of them. And I gather one part was B Company, I think, was way up on the left and ahead of us. Anyway, that was very nice. Next day was all being sniped at and shelled and machine gunned and mortared. Had a bomb land on us in Puto. Nice little place, nice little brick wall or stone wall. Put a couple of my mortars in. But I couldn't get in. I was thinking of getting the pioneers to blow a hole in the fence so that I could go in, you see, and get my carriers in. So anyway, I thought, well, I'll leave the carriers out. And so I just put the two mortars in, dug in nicely. Nice big house, nice big farmhouse in front of us on the enemy side. And then all of a sudden, boom! Gee, everybody hit the dirt. Just one bomb, and it just took the corner off the fence, off that great big stone wall. And the carriers rode up over it. And so we had, we found a great big crock of butter. You know, big jar, holding about 3 gallons of butter. Great big crock of butter. We hadn't seen butter for years, literally. Some of the fellows that had been in the Scotties longer than I had, and hadn't seen, they'd forgotten what butter looked like. And the stuff we got in the mess was certainly not butter. Summertime, you had to grate it off with a file and melt it with a blowtorch. Yeah. So, that was Puto. I mean, Dan put up a real good fight there. Yeah. But, and you don't want all that sort of detail. It's all in Reg's book anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what did you do from there?
Oh, after that, it gets a little bit monotonous. from here on, we pulled out of Puto. Round the left flank and just gotten more fighting. It's just fighting from there on.
Mm-hmm.
The usual thing.
Yeah.
You were machine gunned. For sure you were machine gunned. You were always mortared. Oh, and on the next attack, I had an 88 actually hit the ground in front of the line of carriers that I was with, and it ricocheted, and it must have hit, and then went, and it went. That was when I realized the strength behind those shells, because that thing just went overhead and then made a straight line. If you know your physics, it made a straight line, didn't deviate, didn't drop. And it's going end over end and letting a high-pitched scream out as it goes off from the ruin. Gee, I hate to hit one of those. I never did, fortunately. So, and then the Moaning Mini, that was the night of the... I guess that was... I've forgotten what... at least it's the first time I can really remember the Moaning Minis, anyway. We're in this chateau, and... already forming up for dawn attack, you see. And the Germans cut loose with a few stalks of this minute worker. And right at the gate, one hit a tree, and it just sheared every branch off the tree, stacked it neatly at the bottom, on top of about five bodies who were down there in a shell slit. And they'd all piled into the one shell slit. Just flattened them all. The old Moaning Mini was a deadly little beast. And of course, it roared like a donkey going off. Horrible, horrible sound. And then came in with a nice whine. I liked the whine because you could tell where they were going. You know, you could tell if it was going... go all the way, you could tell if it was going to the right, you could tell if it was going to the left, you could tell if it was going to drop short. And this one that hit us that night, I thought it was coming right onto us. No. 100 yards is close enough to be right on. Yeah.
Any sort of outstanding incidents that you remember come to mind?
I'm sure it would take a similar instance to make me think of it, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I still think if anyone ever tells a war story, I can always think of one that, well, may not be as good, but it would parallel it.
Yeah,
and that's just about the way I can't think of anything right offhand. No, we just, things just went on and on.
So, I mean, you, after D-Day and the Normandy campaign... You worked your way up through France.
Yeah. Yeah, after Normandy, we went up. Went up to, Cap Grenet. And that was interesting too, because they turned one of the big coast guns around, you know, the ones that had been firing across to Calais and so on.
Mm-hmm.
They turned one of these big guns around. It was firing inland, and a great big brute, and you'd hear it go way down. It would be about 8 miles away from where we were. And you hear it, whoomp. Then you hear the shell go by.
disappear off in the distance. And then way, way up the valley, you'd watch it explode. And I was watching it. See, I was mortar platoon officer then. And I was looking. Those guys knew what they're doing. The old gun only fired when there was a convoy. And you know, you put your binoculars on way, way up the valley. Must have been a good 8 miles away. Maybe I've outraged my gun now, but anyway, it was quite some distance away. And he'd take a shot whenever a convoy came in. Well, he's got to be able to see as clearly as I'm seeing. And yet that gun is way down on the coast behind this headland, see? I'm going to have a look around. All by myself. And started poking my head into this hedgerow that ran up the side of the hill. And came across a few mocked out shell slits hadn't been dug, and then I came across a shell slit full of seltzer water. Well, that's good. That's good. And then there was a little path went in. You know, into all the fresh rose bushes, brambles, so forth. And so I walked in, pulled my little pistol out, and turned a corner. There I'm looking right into the spout of an MG-42. And a tent. And a bicycle for this bicycle frame for recharging batteries. Okay. And so I thought, nobody here. Then it started. Come out, I've got you covered. And then three voices. Thought, good God, there must be about five or six of them. And I thought, oh boy. And hand grenades all lying all over the place. Me with six shots. It was sort of silly. I didn't even have a Sten gun with me. So anyway, let out a yell. Okay, fellows, they're here. Okay. You're coming. Oh, up they came. Hands up. Marines. They're not sissies. And an officer in the lead. So, seven of them. Okay, they're coming. So I backed up. Of course, as soon as I turned the bend, I can't even see them. They could have grabbed a handful of... Oh, it was stupid. So anyway, up they went. Once, of course, we broke clear, once we got clear of the hedge, then I couldn't care less, because I could have got three before anyone had done anything. And so marched them down the hill. Anyway, the officer very kindly gave me his camera. I thought it was very nice of him. And a little bit of information. He was the OPEP. He was the one that was firing the gun. Oh, and I still got the map he had with his targets marked out on it. And so, let's see. Oh. So then I quickly, I thought, better get back and check that place out. Might have left something useful behind, like a Smizer. There were about three of them. So, my sergeant and I ran back up. About 20 minute good brisk walk. We got back, went in. Oh, sorts of brandy. And what? Oh, yeah. Triple sec. One big bottle of triple sec. Oh, which I enjoyed for the next 2 months. Yeah. Oh, then it was Calais.
That was... The unusual thing in Cali was the night bombing of the British.
Mm-hmm.
And they came in. And we just saw... Talk about a morale builder. We just saw wimpy after wimpy go down. You know, they came in low, and the sky was just a blaze of machine gun fire, tracer bullets. And we saw, there must have been at least four or five that we saw go down. Yeah. In flames. And the ones that might have been some go down that you didn't see, but. Yeah. And then the next day we were, after the fighting around there. And we were working our way up towards Calais. That was interesting because of the American bombing. I'm pretty sure it was American. It must have been daylight bombing, so I assume it was Americans. And they just came in right over the town and just put stunk after stunk. Everything just going up in pieces. It was during the moving up the coast towards Calais that the mortars did a glorious job. We got up, company was up here, and we got up. Oh, a beautiful spot for a mortar position. Concrete dug up. See, this was the part of Calais. Concrete position. Everything. Oh, you couldn't wish for a better spot to be. And the company ahead of us got orders that night to pull back. This is because of the bombing that I was telling you about, which came the next day at daylight. And so then I got permission to hold my spot. And so the mortar platoon, two mortars I had there, became the forward defense line. Which mortars were not noted for doing that sort of thing. But it just broke my heart to think of having to pull out of there and then having to move back up the next day when you're under shell fire. And sure enough, while I was there, I was up my little old pit and looking long ridge, big sandy ridge. And all of a sudden, I see I know what, the sergeant come back and said, there's somebody moving up there. And so I went up, had a look, and sure enough, I could see a little round dome bob up. And then when I was looking, the most tremendous German I had ever seen in my life, he was a Marine too, and he had a straw-colored helmet on, you know, usual type, but much lighter, not the dark green, the straw-colored, and he stood up. Put a great big MG-42 down as though it was a pistol. Yes. They're fairly heavy machine gun. He went down. Hoisted. So, sat down. Then he disappeared again. That was it. So, sergeant was all for shooting him up with the mortars. The only drawback is, the next minimum distance with mortars, 200 yards, and this fellow was only about 100 yards away. So we had to let that one go. So we couldn't fire the mortars, and I said, I don't think it's a good idea anyway. So we sat back, got a couple more Bren guns. In the mortar platoon, we had no allotment of Bren guns, but by this time, everybody had a Bren gun.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had our own couple of our own Bren guns there, and I think they had a couple of carrier platoon come up, and they thickened it up for us. And then we called for an arty stunk on them. And so up came the FO, forward officer, the observation officer. And so, I see where he is. Yes, yes, yes. Just there. 100 yards is not very far. He said, oh, no, that's good. That light's good. Oh, yes. So now, how far back are they? 25 pounders. Oh, 3, 4, 5 miles or something. I don't know. You know, some sounds like a terrific distance to a mortarman. So he casually goes right ahead, calls down a stomp. Plaster up the whole area. That's that.
Pretty accurate.
Oh, yes. Amazing. Yes. Mortars are not an accurate weapon. They're just for saturation, you know. You can put 2 bombs within 100 yards of each other. Except I luck. Yep. Is this the sort of thing you're after?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is great. Anything else in Cali?
No. Then they hop out of Cali up through Belgium. Nothing in Belgium. And... Oh,
yeah. How about
Antwerp? This has been... Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Yeah. I think we got out somewhere around Ghent. Then we... Pushed on. Yeah, I'm forgetting. Pushed into... Before, south of Antwerp. Yeah, yeah. So it was in the Breskens area, and so we fought in the polders, and that was where I lost the mortar platoon, and I became acting support company commander, and then I became 2IC of Able Company. So from there on, I was back to being a walking soldier again. Yep. And solid Breskens. Nothing. Pretty much there. Lots of shelling. And then I think we left there and went up to Nijmegen. Monty made his big jump. Everybody had their licks in. You know, everything burned out on the way up. But we didn't have any fighting, so it was very nice. We took our little trip up to Nijmegen. And that was where we came in contact with parachute nylon. We had our shell slits lined with nylon. Nylon. Everybody wrapped everything up in nylon. Treated it like old newspaper. If you had fish and chips, you'd have them on nylon. There was nylon everywhere. You know, the parachutes that have come down. Beautiful rope. I have a sailboat, and I think of all that lovely rope.
And what it costs, though.
So, from Nijmegen it was, we didn't move, we just held until about February, and then February the 8th, we pushed up. We had a very interesting, highly interesting trip. So, my company and dog company, I think it was, even with Dog, had to go out in a couple of buffaloes. You know, these are track vehicles which float.
Mm-hmm.
And and we had to push off. And our position was, 8 miles up into the flooded Rhine. Well, the whole of the Rhine Valley had been flooded by that time. And away we went. And made one landing. And someone thought that was where we should be, and I didn't think that was where we should be. And so I said, "Well, we can soon find out. Then we'll just call for a stonk of artillery." He agreed.
showing that he really agreed with me all the time, that we were not on the spot we were supposed to be.
So anyway, we called for the artillery, but we couldn't be sure that the message had gone through. And so I said, the signaler, will cancel it. He said, I'm not sure if anything's getting through. We're not getting anything back now.
And I said, oh, guess it doesn't make any difference anyway. So we pushed off in our little flotilla. And sure, we were coming up onto another spot. And I thought, well, this is it. Said, there ought to be an anti-tank ditch. Big anti-tank ditch, all flooded naturally. And sure enough, boom, I went into it. I couldn't get out. And Martin was the only carrier that couldn't get out. So the other company pulled off. They went their way. And my two, my mine started in on their attack. They didn't need me anyway. Everybody knew it was going to happen. We had all winter to think it out. And I said, well, there'd be nobody in the farmhouse, but that church is going to be a tough one to take. And so they started in. And meantime, I'm trying to get out of this, you know, but my driver is trying to get me and the men on my vehicle out of this damn ditch. Running at it sideways, and just can't quite make it. So eventually we get out. In the meantime, the fight started. And, kicking up all that row, you know, wake everybody up, and I thought there'd be at least a company in the church. Wake everybody up. It's going to be a, you know, real stinky mess when we get to the, go and take the church. So I waited, a better way of putting, waded through, got to it just in time to see the bazooka put an end to the fight for the farm. And evidently the platoon had a darn good job that there was one next corporal or somebody just plain wouldn't give up. And finally came to the front door once too often, and they'd lined up a tip on it, you see, just you reached to fire out the little grill, the tip hit. And that was the end of the resistance. So we herded the Germans out. Then started, oh yeah. And so that was where I started my interrogation. German prisoner. Wie viele Soldaten im Dekash? Well, what I was saying is, how many soldiers are there in the cherry? He did. Nicht verstehen. I was getting mad at him. Finally, set him off. I didn't find out what I wanted. And so we blasted the church with pits, being a firm believer in mortars and not having any. Then we used up most of our pit ammunition, putting holes in the church roof, you see, and thought, well, that'll shake them up a bit. Then we put in the attack on the church. There's nobody there. So we had decided we would have an O group, the two companies, the two of us, right on the church. And we just got together about 7 in the morning, and that was when it happened. Just came in fast. 25 pounders. I think that was the RT I called for. Just came about 5 or 6, 8 rounds came whistling in from our side of the valley, and killed about 3 or 4 of them. And so I assume that was our stonk. I thought it was tanks at the time, because it just hit the just as the group got together, they came in. And that is exactly where I had called for Archie the morning before, or that early that morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. So I guess the message got through all right, because it must have been 25 pounders. Couldn't have been. Of course, we all broke up waiting for tanks to come in. But I don't think it was tanks. I think it was 25 pounders. Yep. Well, so then after we got finished with our sojourn in the water, well, then we were still, we're wandering around.
Up the Isle River, I guess.
And morale was pretty good at this point, eh?
Yeah. Morale was good, yeah, but there were more and more of the old fellows going. You know what I mean? There are more new faces.
Mm-hmm.
New faces, all these new faces coming in, and that was the part that got you. In other words, you never got used to fighting.
Mm.
At least I didn't. I don't think any of the other fellows did. It's just that you knew that sooner or later a line has to come to an end. And the longer you've been in, the more chance there is of that line coming to an end. And then towards the end of the war, towards the end of the fighting, you always felt more keenly if it was one of the older fellows. You see, there'd be so many people that you almost didn't know. That if an older fellow went, you'd hear, well, so-and-so caught it last night or something, you know. And then you get that sinking feeling in your stomach. But everyone did his job. You know, there was no backsliding. No. But it wasn't as much fun, you know, towards the end.
Anything else, sort of, before you got to the end?
Oh, no, I guess that's just about the end.
Uh-huh.
Then it was, as we were working up the Isil River, and then every once in a while there'd be a big scrap. I didn't make any of the big scraps. There were a couple of big fights. And I was fortunate enough, or unfortunate enough, whichever way you might look at it, I missed. Yeah. What they used to do was, you'd send a company in with his 2IC, and the company commander would be yellow, left out of battle, or be the opposite way around. But you never went in with your own 2IC. And as far as possible, it was the same thing with the platoon. If the lieutenant went in with the platoon, then the sergeant was left out. So there was always somebody to take over. It worked. All of a sudden, just in Germany, and Loga, I think it was Loga. Getting close to the end, anyway. And I was back at battalion headquarters, and a message came from command post, go up, take over your company. And so, hopped a motorcycle, and zoomed up, command post, found out that the company had been about to put in an attack, and the 2IC had stopped an 88, or a piece of an 88. So he'd gone out wounded. Another officer, two of them had gone out. And so I said, as soon as I found out what it was all about, well, I said, it's fine, we'll just. It was a perfectly natural attack. There's only one thing you could do, so I called for the artillery fire all over again and was promptly informed, sorry, we haven't any more ammunition for you. you, in other words, you've had your share of the ice cream, boy, you forget it. Boy, that was a bit nonplus, because I didn't like to go up to this place. I didn't know what was in it. This little German village, I didn't know what was in it, but there was almost bound to be Germans. And so then I said, the mortars. So I got hold of the mortars and got a mixture of smoke and HE right on the village itself. And of course, the smoke is phosphorus. Phosphorus burns. So when my company went into the village, it was burning very nicely, thank you.
the Germans were streaming out the other end. And they couldn't stay there, neither could we for that matter.
Yep. Then on the very last night, we moved from this place we were in, Logan, I think it was Logan,
and then had to move up, and somebody had been sent up, I'd sent somebody up to meet the company as it came in. I had to go to the old group. And whoever met the company got drunk, didn't make it. Company went right on till they were stopped by the front forward defense line in the town. So the company sergeant major stopped them there. And so then I had to go find them. Then after I found them, I had to go back to the old group again and go find them again, pass on the information. And then I had to go back again. And that was it. That was when the company sergeant major heard something. He ran out of the house. It was the house, you know, townhouses. And he ran out of the house right smack into a German patrol. And he was the last man in the Canadian Scottish who was killed. Bill. Yep. That's sort of a short trip through the war.
Anything to do with the army after you go back in Canada?
Oh, yeah. After I got back, I was a school teacher, and so I was teaching at Vic High. And so then I started in on the cadets. And I thought, well, if I'm going to do cadets at Vic High, I just will go to the Scottish and do the cadets. So I went back to the Scottish and worked with the cadets there. And I thought, well, you know, if you're going to play around with the cadets, you might just go into the militia, in the reserve. And so then I joined up the reserve. So I was in the reserve for 4 or 5 years after. And, it was funny. In the reserve, I was just about ready to drop out. And I was asked to take the mortar platoon, which had been moved out to Sydney. And so I said, oh, sure. So it was funny. I was a major, and my command called for captaincy. My 2IC was a captain who had been in the Indian Army. He'd been a lieutenant colonel.
Talk about a big step, but it was fun.
He was a good Tony Buckle. He was a real good head. A real man. We used to spend half our training time playing. As soon as training was over for the evening, we spent half of what was left of the night playing crib with the men, drinking beer. Yeah.
I guess that sort of covers it all, isn't it?
Yep. Very sketchy sort of a way.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for your time, then.
Well, thanks. And are you after more people, or?
Yeah.